Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mark, this is a really interesting time period because not only are we looking at an unprecedented crisis with COVID, but we're also just before an election, a major election of not only the president, but also of Congress. Many senators and many congressmen are up for election. There is so much happening out there. And at this point, you know, the EB5 lobbying community is busy, 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 busy. We're out there trying to get the attention of all the political people that we can in order to bring our voices out.
You're right, Mona. And you know who would be best to get on the show to talk about this? Somebody who has experience on both sides of EB5, someone that has owned and operated multiple regional centers for a decade, and someone who has worked with policymakers to help craft a program that actually works for America. I don't know, somebody like Bob Hantz. Bob is the owner and manager of Texas Lone Star Enterprises and Rocky Mountain High Properties and Investments. Both of these regional centers are distinguished in that they cover their entire states, Texas and Colorado, which allows Bob and his team to work with projects anywhere in those states. Bob has also served as security treasurer of IIUSA, and during his tenure there, worked with both lobbyists and policymakers to enact changes in the EB5 program that helped quadruple EB5 fundraising. Bob Hantz, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Well, you know, I'm most excited to be a voice for EB5 at this time, when it needs it the most. And I will say that it's an opportunity to continue education of our public leadership, federal, state, and local. And, you know, I actually worked one-on-one with over 5 sitting presidents and over 4 governors in the state of Texas. So I have a lot of background in public service and in leadership for key programs. And this is a critical time for this country to create new jobs in critical industries, and EB5 is the best answer for that.
Bob, I've heard you say some of the best things happened to me over my loudest protests. I have to say, I just love that quote. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, I can, Mona. I had the good fortune for 20 years to be a partner with a man who was a World War II fighter ace over Germany. He was shot down, captured by the Germans, escaped, and then fought with the French underground, and had a tremendous background. He used to say to me, as a young partner of his, that, quote, some of the best things happened to me over my loudest protests. And I found that that's very true. And I believe that our industry, which has been so very successful since 2008 in creating more than $20 billion of investment for the United States, had reached a time when our own successes caused the priority for what we do to kind of go down. And all of a sudden in March.
Yeah, victim of our own success here.
That's true. The COVID-19 crisis came along. There was a time there in early 2020, if you looked at jobs, the United States didn't have enough skilled workers to fill the jobs we had.
Right.
And our business in EB5 is to create new jobs. So our priority went down. All of a sudden, after the COVID crisis, the president and the Congress and the country almost desperately need to recreate and create jobs.
Well, we're not really out of the COVID crisis yet, Bob. So, you know, the crisis is still evolving in many ways. So I hear you that we not only need to restart the country, create new jobs, but we also have to rehabilitate some of the industries that have been shut down because of this.
Well, that's true. And then there's the issue that our leaders have discovered because of this crisis, that the United States had offshored most of its critical drug and pharmaceutical and medical supply industries.
Yep.
And was relying on not only competitors, but opponents to provide that supply to this country. And so I believe there's a uniting in the country right now around the idea that we have to very quickly try to provide funding for industries in the United States that will replace the offshore industries. And that's a perfect task and a perfect opportunity for EB-5 regional centers.
Right.
I agree with that too, Bob. But how could we make the program better, and who do we need to work with in order to make that happen?
I know that you and I are urging certain congressional leaders and administration leaders to make that a priority and to also cure the one problem that's come up in the last few years is a very long adjudication time.
Before we get into that, Bob, I just want to talk a little bit more about what you class as the China syndrome. This is not derogatory of the Chinese, our Chinese friends at all. This is something that really we were all woken up to, that we, as a country, we depend far too much.
We can't blame the Chinese people for that. That was done by U.S. industry seeking cheaper and more efficient ways to produce products by using foreign labor.
Yeah.
And it's not only China, but it's in India and other countries as well.
You're absolutely right, Bob. This is the perfect task for EB-5, because the EB-5 can and will and does help produce U.S. jobs. And it's U.S. jobs, U.S. manufacturing jobs that we need at this point. How much do you think, you know, if we had real congressional support, how much do you think that would make a difference here?
Well, you know, let me first say that EB-5 becomes a very valuable tool when small and startup businesses, and to some extent other businesses, have difficulty in acquiring capital from the normal banking and other sources. And with this COVID-19 crisis, we're back at that place again. Businesses can't find equity and they can't find loan money in a reasonable way. So all of a sudden, our cards are good again. And the opportunity to bring in foreign immigration money to do the important things for this country and create United States jobs is unique. And we're sitting right at a crossroads where with a little bit of program policy change and a renewed priority with the administration and with the Congress, EB-5 can again be in the business of providing billions of dollars of foreign investment and creating U.S. jobs and creating them in industries that are targeted as being important.
Right. And interestingly, if we actually look at the figures, because, you know, it's always good to be able to state, look, EB-5 has done it before. But between 2008 and 2015, when the program was at its height, there was a huge $20.6 billion of investment brought into this country to help and retain something like 731,000 or 731 million U.S. jobs.
That's correct. We almost had our success end our program, because what began to happen is that the countries interested in U.S. investment, like China and India, more than utilized their visa quotas. And they were relying on quotas not being used by other countries. And yeah. So today, there's a 5 to 7 year backlog on a Chinese or Indian investor.
Not an Indian. Indian has no backlog right now.
I'm sorry?
India has no backlog, and Chinese, actually, it's more like 12 to 15 years.
Yeah, okay. 12 to 15 years, you're correct. But the point is, there are many countries which have no backlog and which you can go literally to the front of the line with the investors if you can find those countries interested in U.S. citizenship and investment. And that's the exciting thing for the future.
Right. So we've often had these discussions that this much money was brought up, this many jobs were created, and that was a time when the program really was operating with one hand tied behind its back.
Well, that's correct. And let me say carefully that USCIS has just announced that they had to furlough a lot of employees, and therefore there was no hope for improvement of adjudication time, which is now 5-7 years, used to be 6 months. And yet, studies that our industry has done show that USCIS not only is collecting in non-taxpayer fee money, more money than they used to collect in 2019 and 2018, but it's increasing.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Why don't you think the staffing increase at USCIS hasn't increased the speed of adjudication and lowered the adjudication times?
There's a pretty good theory that that's not by accident. There are people, as you know, that oppose immigration. And yet immigration is a vital source, in this case, for funding and for creating new jobs without taxpayer impact. So we need, part of our job with this podcast, and I might add our actions with Congress, is to convince our leaders that EB-5 should again be a priority for job creation.
Yeah, I totally hear you. So I'm going to ask you again. How do you feel that strong congressional support is going to help us at this point?
Well, Mona, you asked that when neither you nor I know who's going to win the administration as president.
I do, but we know that both sides support EB-5.
Well, my point is, no matter who wins that election as president or who wins the majority in the Senate and the House, there are strong leaders who are very much supporters of EB-5, like Congressman Mike McCaul or Senator John Cornyn. And I might add, Senator Chuck Schumer. Both sides understand the value of what EB-5 has done and what it can do. So our job is to step up at this moment and say, wait, we are now at a crisis time when this country needs jobs.
I would agree with that. More U.S.-based jobs will certainly help accelerate our recovery.
We're no longer in a situation where we had a surplus of jobs and not enough labor market. We need now to create new jobs, and we need to create them in special industries to replace the offshoring of our pharmaceutical and drug industries and scientific industries. So EB-5 is literally in that place where we can say the best thing has happened to us in the form of a crisis, and that's over our protest, but we have a chance to step up and be a big solution.
If I could just interrupt real quick, Bob, how can we go about getting this done?
We should deal with people like Congressman McCaul, who used to be chairman of the Oversight Homeland Security Committee, now ranking member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. We should ask him, and we are asking him, to step up and approach both the Trump administration in the White House at the highest level and to market this program and the potential of it to congressional leaders. Now, we're not short of Senate leaders, Lindsey Graham, Cornyn, and Schumer, who are already supporters of this program, but they're a little bit, they've got their eyes on an election, And what we need to do is get their attention and cause them to create the priority within the organization. USCIS has, for whatever reason, almost become an obstacle to adjudication. They continue to develop policies, and they're trying to fix, you know, there's an old Texas saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Is that Texas?
And let me say, EB-5, while it had a few problems, really, overall, if you consider the billions of dollars and the hundreds of thousands of jobs, EB-5 has worked very well.
Yes.
And yet they continue to invent new programs which make it more difficult for immigrant investors to invest. And we're in competition with other countries.
I wonder if people actually understand that, because interestingly, we've been discussing that on previous podcasts, just how popular other countries are and are becoming. And I don't know if people here really understand that U.S. immigration is in competition.
Well, they probably don't. And let me tell you, the immigrants know it.
Yes.
Because Canada and other programs are in competition to get the qualified immigrants to invest in their country. And USCIS has changed the investment amount from a low of $500,000 up to $900,000. And that's if you're in a targeted employment area. And if you're not, I believe it's gone up from about $1 million to $1.9 million or $1.8 million. What is it, Mona?
1.8.
Yeah, 1.8 million. So they've doubled the cost for the investor.
Yeah.
I believe that the United States is such a high priority target for immigrants who want their children to live the American dream, that they will continue to invest even at those higher numbers.
I agree.
But they're not going to stand there and wait 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, that's the problem.
For citizenship. We've got to speed up adjudication. And everybody knows how. I mean, the EB-5 industry are the world's expert on how to bring money in and create U.S. jobs. It's hard for me to believe that the amount of review needed is 10 times greater than it used to be. It is not.
Well, USCIS have been coming out with ridiculous RFEs and other type of adjudications, and they have been wasting so much time. One really wonders what they're doing there.
Well, I have to go back to that statement that the lengthening adjudication is not by accident. There are people within the current administration who oppose any form of immigration, even job creating immigration.
Although when they did shut down the borders, they did, it was like a 12-page memorandum. Mona, you saw it, but EB-5 was like a line item on there. Except for EB-5, you can come on in.
Yeah, there is a little flag waved for EB-5 investors, Bob. But Bob's point, Mark, is that even if they want to come in, the adjudication time is taking so long, RFEs
the, coming effectively, out. It's keeping them out. I see. Yeah, I agree.
Even if the border is saying, yes, put your money in, other things are hampering.
And here's a critical thing, and I'm an investor, a real estate developer, a real estate broker for 30 years, and I'm old and experienced. So let me
not
say,
so much of the old, Bob. Let's say let's call it experienced.
Well, let's say senior. But the point is, when you're creating an industry, if you're the CEO of an industry that wants to create new jobs, you can't wait 5 to 8 years to know if you got the investment. The industry has to go on and deal with whatever source of money they can find.
Yeah, but Bob, that's because I think Congress needs to understand that EB-5 is not just an immigrant visa. It is a business deal. It is all about business. In fact, immigration is perhaps 20 or 30% of the petition. Most of the petition is all about business.
But let me tell you, the critical thing about that, and I've created some new businesses, and I'm partners with a billionaire or two, and I will tell you that the role that EB-5 has found that it can play that's most valuable is that it can be a mezzanine financing source for additional equity. Normal businesses go to a bank as a senior lender, and they want the senior mortgage or lien on the capital. But EB-5 is an excellent source for additional equity. Usually they want the business to provide somewhere between 30 and 40% equity. And EB-5 is perfect for that purpose. And that's what has made it so popular, you know, in the years before the adjudication slowdown.
You know, Bob, when you say some of the best things happened to me over my loudest protests, I remember back in 2009 when over protests, we all managed to get the definition of a construction worker changed so that construction workers could be counted as direct workers in EB-5. Because prior to 2009, if you recall, you could not count a construction worker.
Well, not only construction workers, but manufacturing. In other words, if you're buying products manufactured in the United States, the definition included those jobs to be counted.
Right. And that was with congressional help because it was Senator Cornyn at that time.
He opened the door, and Stephen Hill, Laura, and I went in and met with USCIS and got that definition approved.
Wow. So it was yourself and Steve?
Yes, it was.
So, Bob, I know we've identified issues. We have a lot of podcast episodes where we have identified issues, which is currently wrong with the whole system. What we want to know now is how we can fix them. If you were to walk into a congressional office and we could shut the door and you could sit there with a pen, what would you ask them to write?
Well, I would wear a mask, of course, so that Vice President Biden and President Trump aren't infected. I would say, Mr. President, we want you to recognize that USCIS has been and is strangling a program that has been incredibly successful without any impact on the taxpayers. And that's through intentional delays in additional unwarranted policies and in creating longer adjudication times. Projects used to get approved in 6 months, and now it takes 3 to 5 years. And there have been multi-purpose staff increases at USCIS. And USCIS is telling us that they've had to put a lot of their staff on furlough. And that's crazy because if you study the revenues from the fee-based job-creating EB-5 industries, it's been increasing. They have more money than they ever had. So where are they relocating that money?
Not to EB-5 adjudicators, it seems.
Not if they're furloughed.
Well, and the second thing is that we need, actually, what would cure this problem is to have placed in a key position over EB-5, whether it be over USCIS or in a subcategory, we need a proponent for the program.
Yes. We need a champion.
We used to have that. We need a person who will look for ways to speed up adjudication and not reduce the safeguards, but just make it possible for investors to move through the process in less than a year. We need to expedite the processing. And by the way, the law did not say that derivatives, and I'm talking about the children of the investors, should count each one with its own visa. There's a limit of 10,000 visas, and we have one investor who might invest $3 or $4 million, but his family, his young minor children, and his wife each require a visa. So for every investor, we're using up 300 or 400% of the visas.
Right. And we could potentially get so much more.
And the law doesn't say to do that. That was a regulatory change by USCIS. I believe the law, if you read it by the letter, I believe the law says that you only use a visa per investor. and then their children and others are included in that visa. We need to leave the per country caps in place.
Yes,
because the backlog from China alone would choke the program for years.
Right.
We need to make it possible for any regional center that will use funds under their control. And by the way, the longer adjudication means that regional centers often invest in a project and the project pays back the money. And instead of being able to return the funds at the option of the center to the immigrant investors, they have to just hold the money. So there are billions of dollars that regional centers, with slight changes in direction from USCIS, could invest in critical industries.
Yep, the old redeployment.
That's money that's in the bank and it's just being wasted. So I think that with a strong priority administration and leadership in Congress, that even without new regulations, which takes a year, or new legislation, just by prioritizing EB-5, we can turn this program around. And we can look up and say, look there, some of the best things have happened to us over our loudest protests.
Well, Bob, I certainly do like some of your ideas about EB-5, and I hope a lot of them come to fruition pretty soon. Again, Bob Hantz, thank you so much for coming on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Well, I just want to say that I welcome the opportunity to tell the EB-5 story, because EB-5 really does work, and it'll work without taxpayer impact, and it can show up as a star at this time when this country needs leadership and needs a star to create jobs.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.